Good evening and welcome to the Franchise Tag Podcast with me, your host, Freddie Hall, joined back by James and Johnny for the Tuesday night talk show as usual. Action-packed weekend of NFL. I did the Monday night review show all in the same sense, I suppose, of reviewing Sunday and previewing the two Monday night games we had last night. Obviously, the previews of the Monday night games are a little bit irrelevant now, but the Sunday review stuff is all on YouTube, so make sure you go check that out or give it a listen on any of the other podcast platforms. Obviously, got lots of shows coming in the week as well as this amazing show that we do on a Tuesday evening, and we're going to kick off with what is our banner, obviously, that being the Chicago Bears. It's all going wrong for Chicago, it feels like. A little bit of a rickety start. You know, they won the first game 24-17 to the Titans, lost 19-13 to the Texans, then lost this Sunday to the Colts 21-16. There's been a lot of blame already getting shifted around, James. I mean, is this Matt Eberflus? Is it the offensive coordinator Shane Waldron? Is it Caleb Williams? Is he not living up to the hype? You know what, there's been problems in Chicago for a while now. Is it just same old story for Chicago?
Yes and no. Obviously, it's really hard to blame a relatively new coaching staff and a new quarterback and a newly assembled, you know, team, offensive line, receivers, so, you know, running back. It feels like it's just not clicking. But you know, left. If we start with Caleb Williams, for example, now I'm just going to go out and say I'm not the biggest Caleb Williams fan in general. There's just something about him that, for me, I don't know. He seems to be a bit of a controversial figure. Some people really like him. Some people really are not so keen. And I don't know if it's like the things that we've seen from him in college, the sort of the behavior, the pouting on the sidelines, the nail painting and the sort of derogatory messages towards his opponents and not shaking hands with them after the games and stuff. And then declining to participate in the combine, including the medicals, which was a bit of a weird move. He seems like a guy who's very interested in his image rather than maybe his primary focus being on the game as a sort of rookie in the NFL. But if we put all that aside, he is capable. You can see in little flashes that there are things there. I sort of worry that in Chicago, he's only going to end up on the Trevor Lawrence trajectory, which is good in part, never fully realizes their potential. But there are contributing factors. You know, the O-line issues are there. They've got Ryan Bates and swing tackle Larry Borum on IR. Nate Davis at right guard has not played well. And then they had another guy, Braxton Jones. It looks like he might have a knee issue. He went off against the Colts. And I've seen this week, you know, more questions about should they sign David Bakhtiari to try and shore up the line to help Williams, which I actually don't think would be a bad idea. I know that he's a bit hit and miss in his availability from 2001, one start. 2002, we had 11 starts. 2021, 2022, 2023, 1-11 and one start. It is dangerous, but they've already allowed 13 sacks over three games. And in 2022, in 11 starts, 597 total snaps, he only allowed 10 hurries. So it's just, you know, would that experience be invaluable to a young quarterback at this stage? You know, we talked about the coaches. Shane Waldron came in from Seattle to replace Luke Getsy, and he achieved great things with Geno Smith, and it looked like a good hire, but the offense still looks disjointed. I don't know. There are a lot of problems in Chicago, and I just don't really know, Johnny, where maybe they should be starting.
I think this game was, you know, two teams with two quarterbacks who looked, I think, in terms of the way they play and the chaotic nature, I think, of their early NFL careers, sort of painted. Yeah, I think the Colts and the Bears are you know, finding their feet with their new quarterbacks, and it's going to take time. Unfortunately, I think these, you know, obviously Anthony Richardson was very limited in college. We don't know how, you know, we've not got a great amount of tape on him, but we know he's very erratic. And I feel this is, you know, a similar sort of story for Caleb Williams, especially, you know, on Saturday. I think, you know, there was one play where I think there was, it was around a 40-yard pass. And then I think maybe 2 yards later, he threw a terrible interception in, was it the first or the second quarter? Yeah, I think there are, I'm not worried at all about Caleb Williams. I think, you know, James has sort of highlighted the perhaps off the field issues, which have been, you know, quite highlighted quite heavily, I think, from perhaps jealous franchises or fans. And, you know, obviously the circus of NFL media during the off season, particularly for a number one overall player. You know, this guy is obviously very, very, what's the right word? Very confident in his own ability. And it obviously hasn't started the way he wanted. I think the offensive line is terrible, as we've said, and I think that is a huge concern. And the play calling from Shane Waldron, I think the defense is legit, and that's going to be, you know, that's going to help Williams, you know, keep him in games to give him the opportunity. But I certainly think the Bears aren't where a lot of people thought they would be. But I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily for 2024. You know, a lot of people had them down as a potential dark horse to be a playoff team. I think if Caleb Williams can start and you know, develop, you know, through some wins, build like the culture of the NFL, he's obviously very talented. I think that'll manifest itself, you know, over the next couple of years. There were certainly some exciting pieces. You know, obviously Roma Dunze was brilliant at the weekend. And there's obviously all the talents around him. A lot of new faces, and that can be hard, you know, to settle everything into once, you know, right from the beginning. I mean, I don't know. I can see that Bears fans are getting really frustrated with the play calling, and have, you know, obviously they've built this roster up to give Caleb Williams the best opportunity to succeed in his first year. But I wonder now, have they really placed the development sort of traits in the right people's hands? Because there was question marks over Matt Eberflus, and, you know, Shane Waldron, I completely, you know, get what James is saying about his you know, what he was able to achieve with Geno Smith. But I think from what I've seen, wasn't, you know, at the time the most, you know, recruitment that Bears fans really wanted. So I think it'll be a really difficult season, particularly the first half of the season, if they continue to lose games for the coaching staff. We know the Bears franchise has been, you know, has panicked in the past. I hope they don't. I think he'll be just fine. It's just going to be, I think, a little bit more of a frustrating year for Chicago.
I think that's what the problem is. It is the frustration, isn't it? It's saying, you know, enough's enough. We had someone like Justin Fields who's performing you know, admirably in Pittsburgh, and we just want to see the right development and the right things being followed through. We don't want another case where we have this very talented, uber talented quarterback and we just waste his potential. I really do love James's comparison there with Trevor Lawrence about the can he hit them heights? You know, Trevor, again, like Caleb, so much hype before the draft, obviously played phenomenally in college as well. It has never really hit the ceiling that was put over him by fans and media, etc. And it'll be interesting if Caleb can do that as well. But he needs help as well. The blame seems to be going to Caleb, but then you said the fans seem to be blaming the organisation as well. It's not helped by the fact that, you know, the 22nd best offence, they're the 31st in the league in rushing yards, 218 yards. They're the worst in yard per offensive play at 3.7. Yes, they have got a good defence. They've got the top 10 defence currently. But yeah, and James said about the sacks, 4 or 5 sacks, 13. You know, they've got to protect him. But this problem was a 3 year ago problem. It was offensive line. We need to protect our quarterback better. We need to do that better. And it just feels that it's a merry-go-round sometimes in Chicago with the same problems that are happening. I have to admit, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the same thing for me in a way. Like, we had this merry-go-round of problems, and I always said offensive line and secondary. And now it's started to be sort of figured out. But it should have been figured out 3 or 4 years ago, not got to the point where it was dire and then improved. And that's what Chicago seems to have a problem with fixing, is they know the problem. They have a dire problem at offensive line. They have done for a while. They had a problem with their defense as well. They went out and built it, and they traded some good pieces away, but they brought in some pieces as well. So if they're going to give Caleb the best opportunity to succeed, it's got to be in them trenches. That's what the best teams in the NFL do, is do that heavy work in the trenches. So, yeah, they've got to figure something out. I love, James, your point about Dave Bakhtiari. I love that. I love that. I think do that tomorrow. You know, that has got to be an option for you to go and do. I know even if he doesn't play all that much, just a learning curve for some of these offensive linemen within this team to learn from someone like Bakhtiari, who has massive experience within division for one, and within the NFL. So, yeah, I don't know what they're playing at. Maybe that could be a genuine idea that they can go and do and go out to the wire and go and grab him. Let's go from the deep, dark, cold of Chicago. We're not cold, not so cold just yet, Chicago. It's still crisp on the summer, I suppose. But we go from the cold Chicago over to the sunny side of Florida to talk about this Miami Dolphin team that it's feeling like it's starting to crumble a little bit. Obviously not without Tua again. They lost over the weekend 24-3 to the Seahawks. Obviously now 1-2 on the season after losing to the Bills 31-10, but beating the Jags on opening day 20-17. Yes, Skylar Thompson is not it. I think we can agree with that, Johnny. He was pretty bad in the game against the Seahawks. 13 for 19, 107 yards, no touchdowns, no picks at least. But it's telling a story, you know. 35-20 they are with Tua. 5-19 without Tua. I mean, is this also a McDaniel issue as well as a Tua issue in this team, Johnny? I mean, what have these guys got to do? And is there a broader picture for this franchise outside of just losing their quarterback?
Yeah, something's not quite right. I think we sort of saw that even in the first game where Tua was fit. But obviously, you know, losing their quarterback with the offensive weapons that they have and the system that they run is, you know, obviously going to be hugely detrimental for the Dolphins. But, you know, they're averaging just 11 points a game. I think, yeah, if you look back to last season, that surely could have been in, you know, the late 20s. We're used to seeing this Miami team be, you know, incredibly fast at scoring and electric. And it's just been a really slow start to them. I think teams are starting to, you know, obviously, you know, I do think McDaniel is a very good coach. You know, I think he had a bit of a honeymoon period last year where he was, you know, someone quite revered across the league for his, you know, his style, both on and off the field. But the teams, I think, seem to be working him out a little bit. That's obviously not helped by the quarterback, and that is, you know, the number one issue that they have to solve. I think we could be looking at the Dolphins for me feel like the real dumpster fire potential team if they don't get a quarterback this year. And we could be looking at them having a really, really high draft pick, considering, you know, who they have to play, particularly within division. You know, I even think, you know, if you have someone like Skylar Thompson coming up against the Patriots defense, which still is, you know, they obviously got obliterated by the Jets, is still, you know, a team that can win games. Yeah, I really struggle to see the Dolphins being, you know, more than 5-6 win team unless they get someone else in. We obviously don't know what's going to happen with Tua. He could be back. But I feel this whole cycle comes back to them getting a new quarterback next year, unfortunately. Like I say, I don't know if Tua will retire, but even though they have signed him to a long-term deal, I can't see him being the future in Miami much longer. I don't know how you both feel, but if they have a high draft pick, you know, unless they perhaps go out and sign someone like a veteran. Obviously, Sam Darnold's been brilliant. He's a free agent, but for me, it feels they could be in a position to go after and draft a really good quarterback from what is looking like a tasty group, I think, in 2025.
Well, I'm gonna take that information and sort of hand it on to James with the whole quarterback and coach thing, because like Johnny said, they have a quarterback problem, but do they have a coach problem as well? Because, you know, Johnny just said, you know, people adored Mike McDaniel last year, but the brass tacks of it is he's a bit of a media darling coach. The media loves him for them reasons. Like he said, his style, his offensive style, and also his style off the field as well. You know, it is very boom or bust potential, his offense. It's a lot of motions. It's a lot of trickery. But the brass tacks of it is he's 1-12 in his last 13 games against teams that are better than 500. You know, he's been to the playoff twice and crashed out the wild card both times. You know, he's coming up next against the Patriots, the Colts, and the Cardinals. Three games that are pretty tough on paper at the minute, actually. You know, the Pats' defense is very good. The Colts, they can either really be a boom or bust team. The Cardinals are playing some oddly exceptional football at the moment. Like, they're looking at their... I've seen Mike McDaniel, and I've interviewed him and watched him at the podium, and that was after his loss against the Chiefs in Germany, and he was a very, very, very different character to the one we see on TV. It was very different. He was really somber and it was strange. And actually, it was uncomfortable. It was an uncomfortable room to be in, to be honest. And he made it that way. And not out of being, you know, he wasn't mean or horrible or anything like that. But his attitude after that loss was like he was a completely different person. And I was quite excited to see him, you know, even though he did lose to the Chiefs. I was quite excited to sort of see him on the podium and see how he can be. But the final point I'm getting to is though there is a quarterback problem clearly in Miami, is there a bit of a bigger picture at the coaching position as well?
Yeah, I take your point, and I think that it's right to ask the question. You know, just going back to what you said about, you know, when you were there and you're in the room, obviously some losses hit you a little bit different than others, and so maybe that was just a particularly bad day. But I do think you're right. The way that things get spun through the media and everything else, he's got this, like, he clearly is an intriguing personality in a lot of ways. And the media likes to take the sound bites that just add to that and continue to fuel that and feed those to us. Maybe we're not seeing everything. I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good offensive mind. I think he's been let down over the last few years by his defense. And, you know, is that the coordinator? Although they did have Vic Fangio in, who runs a pretty solid defense, and they have had players, but they perhaps not had a very full, consistent, completely healthy group at all the right times. And you know, some of that just comes down to luck. But then you look at the Chiefs, for example, who, when they get injuries, they find ways to plug the gaps. And, you know, okay, they've had a very consistent system now for a few years, but just Miami don't seem to be able to step up in that way. I think league-wide, there is questions around coaches. You know, you look at Kyle Shanahan struggling at the moment with the 49ers as well, and you sort of think, is this a lack of adaptability? Is this overconfidence in the system that you run and not being able to read the opposition midway through the game and say, actually, we need to make these fine adjustments here and maybe we'll be okay? I don't know. I think McDaniel is the right coach for them if everything is there and available. I mean, I don't think we're going to see Skylar Thompson again. I know they signed Tyler Huntley last week, and I thought maybe he would play this week, but obviously it's perhaps a bit too short.
It's been said on Twitter in the last half an hour. Let me just find the tweet quickly. Adam Schefter put it out there. Dolphins head coach said it also was a possibility for sure that Tyler Huntley would be Miami starting quarterback on Monday night for the Titans. That's after Skylar Thompson was considered day-to-day with a chest injury. They also have Tim Boyle on the roster as well.
Well, you know, woof. It's it just goes from bad to even worse. Johnny's just having Tim Boyle nightmare flashbacks from last season.
Bring it on. My thing is, do we overhype the Dolphins too much?
Yeah.
Like, obviously they have.
I think so.
They have, well, who was voted, you know, the top 100 player in the NFL, Tyreek Hill, but you know, Jalen Waddle and Jalen Ramsey, obviously great players, but I don't think there is anything more than. I'm trying not to do them a disservice because I think they are a good team, but I don't think they are a team yet that is a quarterback away from challenging for a Super Bowl, and I don't think they have been for, you know, the last couple of years. I think just even thinking back to last year, they haven't beaten a team until, you know, way late in the season who had a winning record. This isn't me trying to do a disservice to the Dolphins, obviously, as a divisional rivals to the Jets, but I think they have a lot of holes, particularly as you mentioned, James, on defense. I don't know.
I think you're right about what you say though there, Johnny. I think that their stars shine so brightly that it then sort of covers a lot of the gaps maybe on the line and the defense and everything else. And I don't think they've got a particularly great offensive line. And I think they've struggled with that pretty much ever since Tua's been there. I think it's the most difficult position to just sort of plug gaps in the NFL. You know, we were just talking about Chicago and their O-line and what they're going to do and everything else, saying they've had problems there for years. It is the most difficult position because when you draft a guy, it probably takes 3 or 4 years for them to become a top-level player if they're going to get there. And that is, you know, making sure they've playing in the right position and then learning the system and then reading the, and it's just all those little intricacies that take time and experience to build up. And with line players, we tend to give them that little bit of extra leeway and leniency that we don't give with quarterbacks, for example. But, you know, unfortunately for Miami, it's just all coming together at the wrong time. And I think that there may be a need to go back to the well and maybe start this thing again and maybe think about moving on some of your big money players and buying in more experienced free agents. You know, you're talking about the quarterbacks and like Sam Darnold, for example. That'd be great for them because I don't think he'll get another year with the Vikings with JJ McCarthy there. Or, you know, again, drafting another, or do you try drafting again? It's, and then, you know, you could question Tyreek Hill is there and he wants to win. And is he going to sit and start again? Or do you move him on and see what you can get? But he's getting older. It's a really difficult one, I think, in Miami to know what to do. I don't think they're far away. If Tua is healthy and playing well, and the system works, I don't think they're a million miles away. I think their bigger problems are on defense than they are on offense that would be able to get them that little maybe push into the playoffs. But there's so many question marks over so many positions at the moment, and the quarterback obviously is the biggest one that it's really hard to do. I feel quite sorry for Mike McDaniel, to be fair, because this is a really difficult, sort of unprecedented position to have to be in. And, you know, they've said about getting in outside experts to help Tua in his recovery. And I think he'd love for Tua to be able to play. I don't know if he wants to be the guy that says no to him, though. It's really hard to say to a guy with a seemingly invisible injury, say, sorry, but we can't have you back because we just can't risk it. And Tua feels fine and wants to play. So I think he's in a difficult position. But I think they're closer to tearing it down and starting again than they are to pushing on and moving forward, unfortunately. And that's, I feel quite sad about that for Miami in a way, because there was something there, something intriguing building in an intriguing, exciting division. And it's just slowly slipped away through unfortunate injuries. And yeah, that's gonna be a difficult one to swallow for Dolphins fans.
It's funny how you feel like you've got it all in the palm of your hands, and then out of nowhere it seems to sort of slip out your fingers, doesn't it? We have a new section we are doing that we are opening to you guys, obviously, and it's sort of it's a hear me out, hot topic, hot take section that we're doing with you two here today. So I'm going to let James go first. Me and Johnny do know what the hot take is. Spoiler alert. But yeah, I suppose it's for James to pitch what his hot take of the week is.
So my hot take after 3 weeks, it is, you know, circumstantial on the rest of the season, obviously, and how things go. But if the Steelers continue to win games, I think a lot of it will be due to their defensive performances, as it has been through the first 3 weeks. And if that continues to happen, I think we will see a defensive player win MVP, league MVP, this year in TJ Watt. The last time it's happened twice before, 1971, Alan Page of the Minnesota Vikings won, but Lawrence Taylor in 86 was the last defensive player to win it. It's very easy to give it to the quarterback. They get all the accolades and everything else, and the defensive guys just get defensive player of the year, and TJ Watt has deserved it, rightly so, over the past few years, but I think he deserves more credit than he's actually getting. He's putting up the numbers that we've come to expect from him already. You know, 3 sacks, a fumble recovery, 10 total tackles. He's got a sack every game already this season. And if he carries on that trajectory, he could put up the best numbers he's ever done. But yeah, I think obviously the Steelers have got a tough schedule, especially at the back end of the year. And if we just run through it quickly, it's at Colts, v. Dallas, at Raiders, v. Jets, v. Giants. Week 9 bye, then it ramps up at Washington versus Ravens, at Browns, at Bengals versus Browns, at Eagles, at Ravens versus Chiefs versus Bengals. So all their division matchups come in the back end of the year, and that could be where the pressure really gets applied. But again, that's where somebody like TJ Watt can really sing and come alive and carry this team. Obviously, you know, we've got to hope he doesn't pick up any injuries and stuff along the way. But yeah, so that is my pitch for the hot take, is TJ Watt to win league MVP this year for a defensive player, the first time since 1986.
Obviously, I love it. Obviously.
Shocking. Shocking. As a Pittsburgh Steelers
fan, I am in love with this. I mean, he has been robbed of a lot of defensive player of the year back awards. Like, he won it in 2021, should have won it last year, robbed of that. And has other years where he should have won it as well. You know, 6-time Pro Bowl. I just, my thing is, you know, he broke the sack, the single sack season record. Sorry, no, he matched it. No, he matched it. He matched it. Sorry. I think when you know, if he did that, and amongst everything else that he does, that would have been maybe the time. I just think at the minute though, there's like 5 quarterbacks who are playing at a really good level, but like not an incredible level, like just a really good level, you know? And if you got to the end of season, you had like multiple quarterbacks that were all playing at a pretty good level, maybe an elite level. Let's say it's 4 quarterbacks who are playing at an elite level, and then TJ Watt playing at an elite level as well, on track to maybe, you know, match that or get close to that sack record again. I think it then becomes an option. He is just such a game. He is a single wrecking ball game wrecker. He changes everything in every game on that defense. You know, he is so good. My also other thing is Aaron Donald also did the same thing and never won it either. And got in the conversation a couple of times, but never won it either. I mean, I want this to happen. I definitely want this to happen. I think it would be really, really refreshing for it not to be a quarterback. I think it would be massively refreshing. The fact that it's not happened in 1986, it feels like it's probably never going to happen again, unfortunately. But yeah, why not? Let's just shake it up and change it up, NFL. We are bored. We get bored of the same teams getting to Super Bowl all the time, like the Patriots and the Chiefs. We want to see something new and fresh. And that is TJ Watt as MVP.
Yeah, I think as I said to you earlier, I mean, if we were voting for MVP now at this stage after 3 weeks, for me, the three front runners would be, especially after the performance last night, Josh Allen. I think Kyler Murray would be up there because I think he's carried the Cardinals in an impressive way. And TJ Watt. And I don't know why he deserves it any less than those guys. And this is the problem for me with the league and obviously with the Associated Press who vote for the award and everything else. It's just, okay, it's an offense-driven league. I understand that. And they get all the glory and they make the shiny big plays and everything else. But the defensive side of the ball is equally as important. And, you know, what's that saying? Is it offenses win games, defenses win championships? Now, like, I understand that the Steelers aren't necessarily winning championships and everything else, whereas maybe, like, you know, obviously the Chiefs are, and maybe, say, Chris Jones, but he's really sluggish throughout the season and only comes alive in the playoffs, really. Whereas TJ Watt is alive all the time. You know, if you think if you put him on these teams, on the Bills, on the Chiefs, or somewhere like that, for example, where they're pushing every time, I actually think he would be in with a shout even more. It's only potentially the team that is on and they're not making massive shockwaves in the league and going on like 12 game winning seasons, whatever, that maybe holds it back. But I think if they make the playoffs this time around, and I think obviously they've got themselves off to a great start, and if they can carry that on up to their week 9 bye, only having picked up a loss maybe or two, it's going to be a lot of defensive play that gets them there. I admire what the Steelers have done offensively. It's been very scrappy and sort of very in your face, but I like this sort of return to 1970s kind of hard hitting, hard nosed, smash mouth football, and it comes on both sides. And TJ Watt is got to be at the fore of that. And I think now is the moment, if it's going to be ever. I think we've seen far more impressive defensive displays league wide than we have maybe over the last couple of years. You know, the games feel closer, the defenses feel like they're changing games more than they have done. And the Steelers are sort of epitomise that at the moment for me. And so, yeah, let's just make it happen just once before it, and then give it Mahomes again if you want. Ugh, boring. You know, just anyone, whatever. Go back to it for the year after that. But let's just give the defensive guys some praise, some glory, some love, shine the spotlight on them. Just for once, because they are as important, if not more important, than the guys on the other side.
It's a hot take. It's a hot take. Can Johnny beat that hot take, though? Yeah. What are you bringing to the table, Johnny?
Well, I'm gonna take a big, big risk, and
that's what it's all about, Johnny. It's all about taking risks.
It's all about. But I think, you know, based on what we spoke about a lot, the offseason and the start that the San Francisco 49ers have had, the injury issues they're now dealing with, I'm going to make a bold claim that they're not going to make the playoffs in 2024. Now, obviously, they have, you know, they're dealt with injuries. Their best player, Christian McCaffrey, is out. Their quarterback, Brock Purdy, is day-to-day. Obviously, coming off the back of a really good game, actually, against the Rams. I think the 49ers offensively did enough, and they have the tools around Purdy without the injury of McCaffrey. Obviously, Samuel's also out, but, you know, they're having to rely on Juwan Jennings. The defense is looking a little bit shaky, actually. I think, again, injuries are playing a big issue. Javon Hargrave on defensive line. I think he had a good game actually against the Rams, so he'll be a big miss. But there's, I think, concerns in the secondary, particularly with the weekend. I think the cornerbacks really struggled against the Rams. Elsewhere, you've got Fanga coming back from I think, did he play at the weekend? But he's obviously coming back from a long term injury. They've got the Patriots next week. Now that should be, if Brock Purdy's fit and can play, a get back win, but you then start to look at, you know, their divisional rivals, how, you know, the Rams are in a similar situation injury wise and were able to pip the 49ers with what I think many of us would say is a weaker side. The Seahawks are looking like a bit of the real deal, particularly defensively. That'll be a struggle. And the Cardinals, who, you know, have hyped up, have started the season really well. They've, outside of the Patriots game, I'm just getting up their fixture list. I'm struggling to see, you know, absolutely nailed on W's for the 49ers for the rest of the year. They've got to face the likes of the Chiefs, got to go to Lambeau Field, again obviously the Bills away as well, the divisional rivals, a lot of big teams the 49ers are going to have to come up against with a fairly depleted team. It's a big risk because we know how talented, and you know, I think on the weekend when you play the Patriots, I'll probably be, you know, mincing my own words a little bit because they will be absolutely dominating New England. But yeah, I have some concerns. I think from the off season, particularly with you know, the disputes with the like of Ayuk and Trent Williams and the like, there's just something I don't think that's right in San Francisco. And I, you know, that's both off the field and on the field. I just think there are, you know, they're a team that their division are starting to catch up. And yeah, I think there are just, you know, it's obviously so early in the season to say, I don't want to go back on this, but yeah, it's something that I think a real concern for the 49ers. And I think there are at the moment a lot better football teams that they're going to come up against in the coming weeks.
Initially, when you put this in, I thought, oh, that's a pretty hot take, but I completely disagree. And then when I looked at the schedule, suddenly I was like, yeah, actually, there is not many games here where I go, that's a win. They're going to go there and win. Or they're coming into San Francisco and winning. Like, suddenly, the way they've played, the way some of these other teams have been playing, but maybe we thought were not so good. You sort of looked at their schedule and they had a lot of teams where you went, oh, well, there's a few easy wins there. And then these teams have actually improved this year, you know. And now we're in a situation where if these teams could continue that and 49ers continue having the injury problems that they're having, where suddenly this team goes from, you know, a 13-win team to, you know, maybe an eight-win team, maybe, you know, maybe seven-win team. I think eight, you know, eight, nine, I sort of had. But with the NFC and how that's shaping up, maybe that's not good enough to get through there. I mean, this division felt like, oh, the 49ers are going to walk away with it. This division now feels incredibly open. You know, three teams on 1-2. The Seahawks are 3-0. It's a bit more wide open, James, than it was initially thought at the start of the year. What's your take on this?
8 wins could still see your bottom of the division.
Yeah.
It's like when we had the, you know, you're obviously, you know, you know, the Steelers, Browns, Bengals, Ravens, a few years ago, all teams were like on 8 wins at one point, and it was just, you know, it just never knew who was going to get out of there. And this division is shaping up to be that way at the moment. And if the 49ers, based on what we've seen so far, did finish at the bottom of the division, it would be an enormous surprise. But after 3 weeks, you can very much see it happening. Now, there's a lot of time for him to get right, don't get me wrong. And this is a team that could quite easily go on an 8-game unbeaten streak and knock off all the teams in their division when they see them again with relative ease. But I don't think there's any gimmies, you know. Seattle are looking, you know, they're not setting the world on fire with what they're doing, but they look solid. Like, they look like a team that you don't want to go to Seattle and play, you know.
I think this is the most exciting division in football at the minute.
Ooh, that could be a hard take.
I think that's definitely a fair point.
It's definitely up there, yeah.
I really want to see more. I think there is much more to come, even though the good starts from the Cardinals and the Seahawks. And that's what I think, if I was a 49ers fan, would I think I'd be a little bit concerned about that. I actually think you know Monk hasn't had a great game last week, but I think there's so much more to come from him. I think he's missed a few chances. Kyler Murray's been exceptional, and the defense has started to look really good as well. They were able to frustrate the Lions in parts this weekend, and yeah, I just think that, you know, Sean McVay was my pick of the year for the coach of the year, and I think he, like, you know, how Matt LaFleur's doing in for Green Bay's, you know, obviously different situations, but in terms of being able to deal with injuries and overcome them, he proved that obviously on Sunday, and I think he's, you know, he's for me a top three coach in the league. And yeah, I wouldn't want to come up against this Rams team. We saw how, you know, obviously won on Sunday, but how ruthless, you know, solid they were last year, particularly when a lot of people had written them off because of their form the year before. And I think the 49ers are previous, I think, with when they lose players, you know, three, 4 years ago, where they literally had everyone out injured, and they you know, I'm not saying that Kyle Shanahan, I think he's a fantastic coach, and can certainly be able to deal with them, but I think with McCaffrey out, Kittle out, Samuel out, Purdy looking questionable, that's their offense there. You know, that's them gone, and I don't think the defense has hit the levels that it has of previous years. So yeah, I think there's definitely question marks in San Francisco at the moment.
I think it's interesting that you say as well, and I was having this conversation with somebody not long ago, it's going to be difficult for the 49ers going forward as well, because they've got so many big stars that they pay so much big money to. Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, Trent Williams, a couple of others. And then obviously you've got Brock Purdy, who's still on his rookie deal, but is going to need paying at some point. And is it going to be difficult for them to build their team out consistently, like the way that the Chiefs Fred Warner's on a massive deal. Yeah. And, you know, are they going to be able to keep these players? Are they going to be able to sign, you know, the complementary pieces around them? Are they going to need to just be going to, like, lesser knowns and rookies and free agents and everything to plug the gaps? And I don't know, it just doesn't feel like an overly sustainable model for the 49ers. I don't know if they should be worried from this season going into next how it carries on.
I think they have probably, the Chiefs and probably the Eagles have probably had the window of opportunity open for the longest in terms of you know, being able to go on win championships. The thing that the 49ers haven't been able to solve is their quarterback room. But with obviously Brock Purdy, that's a big lifeline in terms of you're not paying someone a lot of money at all. You've been able to build around him. You've got a great roster. But yeah, I the next couple of years, perhaps this is a good thing that he played quite well against the Rams, even though they lost. But if he has a bit of a down year, maybe his stock goes down. It's going to be crazy. I think when that comes around, you know, we're talking about in the NFL at the moment, where if you have a player who you see who is possible, you know, not necessarily elite, but is good enough to be your long term, or you know, someone you want to keep around, you're going to have to make him the highest paid player in NFL history.
That would be crazy to do that to Brock Purdy, though. It really would.
Crazier things have happened in the NFL.
Yeah, though. Definitely so. Yeah,
and it all feels like it's all creeping up more and more as the seasons go by. James, Johnny, thank you. This is about all the time we have had for this evening. Thank you. Yeah, thank you both again for joining me tonight. Thank you guys for watching or for listening. Make sure you check out the rest of our shows in the week. We've got the college show coming up. And we also have the other shows that we've got for the rest of the week. So make sure you keep an eye on that. We obviously are creeping ever closer to the London games that are really just around the corner. Gosh, they do come around quick. And obviously the three London games that we have, we'll be doing a lot more content during around that time. We'll also be attending all the games, whether it be myself or other people within the podcast and media days as well. So make sure you say hello and keep an eye on our content for more stuff that's coming out. Make sure you share our YouTube and our socials to everyone who likes NFL, whether they're new, old, or want to get into it or are very established. So until then, thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you all again next week.